Welcome back to the second episode of the Tomahawk Nation Hoops Dedicated podcast. This is our first instant cast, second episode, first instant cast coming to you after the Clemson game. Matt Minnick here with Michael Rogner, and we're talking after the Clemson win, a 72-53 beatdown of the Tigers. And honestly, if you've watched Leonard Hamilton basketball teams over the last decade and a half, this is not an uncommon trend where it's a tight game maybe in the first half, and Florida State, using its superior depth and just frankly athleticism, just wears the opponent down at home and wins by double digits. Michael, is that what you saw?
Yeah, I mean I've seen this game 25 times, but I still felt a little uncomfortable in that first half. I mean, the team did not play well at all. And then he had that weird kind of loose ball scramble at the end of the half, and Clemson hits a three. The dude's an 18% shooter, hit two threes, and go in with a 6-point lead. And at that point, I was a little concerned.
So like you said, you've seen this 25 times, and it feels like something we've seen a couple of times already this year. When Hamilton goes to that first full line change around the maybe 15-14 minute mark, at this point, the bench just has not been giving a lot offensively, although we'll talk in a second about Anthony Polite's second half explosion. But is that something that you've just got to keep doing that to develop the bench?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There are some guys on the bench that have to be good. I would say by March, Raekwon Evans is a key one. Anthony Polite, Patrick Williams, all those guys have to keep playing heavy minutes in order to develop. So I've got no problem with Ham doing that or with the style. We just the disparity right now between the guys that he's comfortable with and the guys who are starting on the bench is pretty huge.
Yeah, what I hear you saying is that we've got to sow some seeds now in order to harvest the fruit later in the year, which I get. Basketball is not a sport where there is any award for being the best team in December or even the best team in February. So I'm with you there. What is the ideal situation? Like, Raekwon Evans is a great example. If in March this plan has come to fruition, what is the ideal case for the type of player that Raekwon Evans maybe hopefully could be this season?
I think we saw it last year with David Nichols. Early on, he was a complete mess. Just every good team we played just turned him into jello. And then by the end of the year, he was it the Virginia game that he
it was.
Scored a bunch of points quick and basically
Virginia
won us
ACC
that game.
Tournament game.
Yeah, in the tournament. Yeah, exactly. So that's what we need out of Evans is one, to have him come in and be able to rest Forrest and the team doesn't just totally tank. And then also to be able to play off the ball with Forrest, give us another ball handler and hopefully start giving us a little more offense than he's doing right now.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, so in the second half there were several possessions where Evans and Forrest were on the court at the same time. I felt that was where Evans perhaps looked his best. It was also helpful that they were playing with a double-digit lead, which is, always easier in terms of executing a half-court offense. But how can Trent Forrest – I mean, I honestly, when I look up and see the guy – when I see rosters or the lineup on the floor that does not include at least one of MJ Walker, Devin Vassell, or Trent Forrest, I wonder where his offense going to come from. How can you get those guys rest and also not go 5 or 6 minutes without getting a basket? Is it just these, folks like Patrick Williams and Evans and Gray and hopefully not Polite simply just have to step up and execute the half-court sets and make a bucket?
Yeah, well, I don't think that we'll play a meaningful possession without at least one of those three guys that you just mentioned on the court. And until until Polite and some of those other guys, Raekwon Gray, he's a good example, develop a little more of an offensive game, then we're pretty reliant on transition and just drive in and dish for a three, and that's basically what we're going to get out of those guys you know, until they develop a little bit more.
Yeah, and the defense in the first half, some of it looked like it was a little bit of Clemson just frankly having, you know, they were a bit above their average from three. That regressed to the mean in the second half, as the mean is wont to do. But I will say that the defense in the first half was not clicking on all cylinders. And it looks to me like we're at a point with this team right now where the offense is simply not good enough to win meaningful basketball games if the defense takes a day off. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and the offense in the second half, though, was really good. And the difference is that small ball lineup that we went to with about 6 minutes to go. That's obviously not something you can do for every game or all game every game, but how is Florida State going to develop a little more of an offense, you know, when they have their post players in? Because today it was a mess, and it also enabled Clemson, which we can get into, it enabled Clemson to really be a lot more efficient in their offense and get better looks than they were able to get in the second half.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get into that. Your point, this wasn't the first game that they've gone to the small ball lineup and kind of stuck with it. They did the exact same thing against Indiana a few days ago, and it was able to cut that Indiana lead down to about three with 4 or 5 minutes to go when basically at the end of that, it looked like Florida State's legs just wore out, three games in 5 days, and their legs just fell apart. But so it's two games in a row where the opponent builds a decent size lead, switch to a small ball lineup. Is that something that you would expect to see from the tip?
I would be really surprised to see it from the tip. I mean, Ham and his staff are pretty, you know, there's a reason that they have such a great reputation for developing bigs. And I would imagine that their vision for this team includes Balsa and Dom, or one of, you know, at least one of those guys playing well from the post in March and you know, giving us a lot of meaningful possessions but right now it's just not happening.
Yeah. No, I agree with you, first of all, that there's no way that we see a tip that doesn't include either Balsa or Dom, you know, tipping for the ball unless both were hurt. As far as what would I like to see, I think it's an interesting study. And would you prefer the higher floor, lower ceiling type of team, which to me would be probably if we predominantly decided we're just going to switch to small ball, I think that our small ball roster could crank out 19, 20, 21 wins and go to the second round of the NCAA tournament. Or would you prefer a lower floor with a higher ceiling option where you are, you know, the small ball roster is something that you're able to deploy for stretches to really catch a team off guard, or maybe to speed a team up that's not comfortable with it, but also being able to deploy a physical interior presence that can grind teams. And, you know, at some point you're gonna have to play, you know, a team that has some true bigs, and they would just eat the small ball lineup alive. So I'd ask you, would you, if I asked you right now, if I guaranteed you second round of the NCAA tournament, or like, you know, we're probably going to maybe get to the NCAA tournament anyways with our resume already. Do I get the sense that you'd rather prefer to keep to try to develop those bigs and try to see what our ceiling can be in March?
Yeah, I think that's the better team. Is you've got 12 scholarship guys. You want all 12 of them contributing. And having Balsa and Dom out there gives us a look on both ends of the floor that's just a lot different than the small ball, and it's gonna come in handy if we can get a little more efficient with it.
So let's switch over to Anthony Polite. We talked a little bit about him earlier. It was the most complete second half, at least a half of a game that we've seen him play in Garnet and Gold. I believe he ended up maybe 4 for 6 from three, but looked confident shooting the ball, his standard excellence on defense. I don't want you to speculate, but is something that would you say you were surprised by this, or have you seen that, you know, maybe flashes that this could be coming?
Well, the shooting, I mean, he's one of those guys that looks, when he is in rhythm and shooting, that the ball's going down. You know, he's got a beautiful shot, nice release. And it was nice to finally see him have that, you know, that kind of game. In terms of all the other stuff that he does on offense, it can be a little bit of a mess. There was one where he passed up the open three and then drove, and soon as he put the ball on the ground, I was just trying to figure out where the turnover was coming, and sure enough, he went baseline and you know, threw it to the bench or something. But so it was great to see him, you know, have that shooting game, and it came totally out of the small ball lineup, which creates a lot more space. So I think that he's one of those guys who's probably going to benefit. The more small ball that FSU plays, the better he's going to play.
Does Anthony Polite benefit from a better and more efficient Raekwon Evans? And by that, I mean someone else who can initiate the offense in that second unit to where Polite can do what he does best, which is hit corner threes, grab offensive rebounds, and whip the ball around the perimeter if he's not forced to actually initiate the offense.
Absolutely. Yeah. Polite, I think Polite is sort of like where MJ was last year. You know, we thought of MJ as this 3-and-D guy, and that's what Polite is right now. And all the other stuff is going to come. He's only a sophomore. He's really old for a sophomore, but he's only a sophomore. Having Evans, to get back to your question, having Evans be able to handle actually running the offense would do wonders for Polite and basically all the other guys.
Yeah, and I do agree with you that the small ball unit does seem to create more space, which Polite at this point in his career seems a bit more confident operating in space than in confined areas. His shooting then in turn opened up more space, and I think what you saw was that dominant offensive performance of the second half. Let's touch on Vassell real quick as well, who really had – he kind of – I think started the second half off with that. Did he hit the corner three to start it off right off the bat?
Patrick Williams hit the second one, I think. The first one, yeah, it might have been Vassell.
Yeah, I think it was Vassell. And then I know for a fact he had the offensive board, the kick out to another three. He hit the floor on defense. He had a huge block that actually didn't lead to transition points, but you know, it makes Clemson think twice about going in on the inside. And then also contributed with a couple of nice pull-up Jays. That is what I think we talked about on the first podcast with he is one of those guys that really just needs to become a dude, you know? Like, and by dude, I mean he just has to start carrying the offense and saying, I'm going to get my shots up when the offense needs some buckets. Did you see that from him today?
Yeah, I thought that, you know, people kept complaining. I know you're asking about Vassell, and I'm going to talk about MJ Walker, but people kept complaining that MJ Walker was forcing the action today, and he was, and he took a lot of bad shots. But I honestly didn't care. It was like, we need these guys to be more aggressive, and MJ was finally doing it. And Vassell did it well early in the game, and he did it well late in the game. He had a stretch in the middle where he was kind of passing up, you know, some shots and moving ball around. But I thought overall Vassell did a really good job of being more aggressive. He's just – that's not in his nature. And to see him, you know, really do it at a time when Florida State needed him to do it was good to see. And I would like to see him be – he took 10 shots today, I think. I would like to – in a game like this, I would like to see that at like 14 or 15 shots, like really looking to get a shot up.
Yeah, I think people don't realize that Devin Vassell is – he only just turned 19 in August. He has the highest offensive rating on the team of folks who played enough minutes to qualify for a national ranking. And I'm with you on Vassell needing to take even more shots. I feel better about a Devin Vassell, you know, in transition three probably than I do about someone else shooting a half court, you know, jumper or forced layup. I also agree with the MJ Walker. I'm okay with him being aggressive and hunting shots, particularly in a game where in the beginning, frankly, Florida State just putting up a shot might not be a bad thing if they can turn that into an offensive rebound or next time it forces the defense to respect it, that can then get an open look for someone else. I think MJ, I'm actually not concerned. I think the more that he's on the court, he's missed three games. He's missed a whole lot of practice time. the just him getting more shots up is a good thing. And that kind of leads me to one other question I had in my mind while watching the game. You know, it was a 15-16 point lead for much of the last 10 minutes. And I was thinking maybe, you know, does Hamilton look to get some of the starters or maybe the small ball starters out at the 5 minute mark? I think we all held our breath when Trent Forrest kind of twisted his ankle there a little bit there when he stepped on the defender's shoe. What did you think about really the starters playing up until about a minute and a half to go in the game?
I would have been fine with them staying in the whole game. I mean, we had gone to the small ball lineup with about 5 minutes left in the first half. So they played together for 25 minutes essentially. And I would have been fine going to the end because they were still playing hard. You know, they weren't taking plays off, and that's how you develop guys. You know, we go to the green team there at the end, which is fine. You know, I like to see those guys play as much as everybody else does. And Linder hits the three and everybody's going nuts. And, you know, it was a good ending. But at this point, I don't really care how much the new guy – I don't think anybody's going to get too many minutes at this point, except maybe Forrest. You know, he obviously needs to rest. But I'm fine with extending the guys to the end of the game.
Yeah, no, I do see your point there that just getting these guys minutes together on the court is not that that's been a challenge even in practice. So I see your point there. I guess we'll just have to hope that, you know, there's no freak accidents like what almost happened with Forrest there on the ankle turn. So again, Florida State does just dominate Clemson in the second half. I think it was 45-20 was the second half to turn a 6-point halftime deficit into a 19-point blowout victory at home. 54-3, I believe, is the home record now over the last 3 years. So I think going into this, you know, you said a double digit win. I said by 15. Florida State actually did us both better than that and wins by almost 20. So that's a bow on that. Like, what is there any? It's a Sunday here. Is there any other big Florida State news that came out today? I think there's possibly that other sport might have made a big announcement with the hiring of head coach Mike Norvell. This is, if you're keeping count at home, this will now be the fourth head coach at Florida State football since the beginning of Leonard Hamilton's tenure. Fifth, if you would count Odell Higgins there as a head coach. Michael, any thoughts on Coach Norvell?
Well, I watched, you know, they interviewed him during the game and I caught a little bit of the introductory press conference. It's hard to lose a press conference. So I will give him that he definitely won that. He had good energy. Taking a step up from Memphis to FSU that's a big step. But FSU is in a league that it can dominate outside of one team and a hotbed for recruiting. And it's not, you know, with the history that Florida State has, it's not a particularly tough place to win. So it is a big step up, but you know, this guy can probably do it. Of course, I said the same thing about our last coach. So
about Willie. You know, I will have to admit that I've been one that was more down on the process than most. I generally speaking, don't think it's great timing to try to hire a head coach when the president of the university is only going to be here another 9 to 12 months. And the athletic director is essentially, he's not an interim athletic director, but he technically is because he kind of took the job knowing that he'd be leaving with President Thrasher. So I never really bought into the timing, but I will agree with you that I liked the comments that I heard. I think it was nice of Norvell to show up to the basketball game if he's on campus on the first day, go and take some pictures with some fans, take some pictures with some of the students. I also caught a bit of the intro press conference. I appreciated how he shouted out his former bosses. And even his high school coach and peewee coach, it seems like he's the kind of guy who values relationships, which of course is big in recruiting. I feel like at this point, I just almost feel like it's as big of a crapshoot as three-pointers, right? Sometimes the threes go in and sometimes they don't. I feel like that's where I'm at now with head coaching searches. Particularly if you're not one of the two or three schools who can actually go and snatch another proven head coach from a named blue blood, the way someone like a UNC did with Roy Williams coming home from Kansas. What would be, I don't know, is there a baseline that you would even want to see for his first year? I mean, is 6-6 good? I don't think we're going to be very good next year. I know neither of us are football analysts, but.
Yeah, I can't see us being very good at all next year. But 6-6, I think that's got to be the floor for any Florida State team. I mean, there's gonna be some talent regardless of who's on the roster next year.
And you're still playing games against, you know, Wake Forest and Boston College and teams right. like that.
Yeah, you get like 3 free wins and then you got to win 3 more games. It's not that hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you there. So speaking of head coaches and just guys that, you know, expectations, I want to change gears here a little bit and talk about Mike White and the situation down at UF in Gainesville. I'm not suggesting that the seat is hot for Mike White. Maybe it should be, maybe it shouldn't. I don't think it is, but we're talking about a team now that I believe has 7 blue chip recruits. They're 6-3, but they're really 1-3 because only one of those 6 wins is over a meaningful opponent. And that was the win over Xavier. And I've interviewed Mike White. I've had personal conversations with him. He is a sharp, he clearly knows basketball, and there's clearly something not working with his coaching in Gainesville. Do you have any thoughts on what's going on down there?
Yeah, when I watch them play, I mean, I'm not talking to people like I am about Florida State basketball, but when I watch them play, there's just no identity. Their offense is a bunch of guys who think it's their turn to put up a shot. If somebody comes in on the bench and he's been sitting longer than they think, then I will guarantee he's going to be shooting like the first time he touches the ball. And defensively, they're kind of gelling just because they do have so much talent and they have a pretty good defensive system, but their offense is just a train wreck. You've got, when I look at that team, I see Kerry Blackshear, Keontae Johnson, Noah Locke. Those 3 guys should be scoring 45 points a game, 40 to 45 points a game, and everybody else should be taking what comes, you know, in the flow of the offense, but they're not. It's like,
what is their offense? Florida State has made this, you know, we had this great twin post kind of read and react motion. And now we've kind of switched to this 4-out, 1-in, which I think was a brilliant move. We've talked about before, really utilizing this evolution to the positionless basketball. What is UF's offense? What is their identity? What do they do?
Well, in theory, I mean, they've got some, like most teams, they've got sort of an early offense and then a mid offense, or, you know, a final 20-second offense, or whatever you want to call it. So they've got a bunch of actions where they're looking to get something early. They play pretty slow, so that's not usually all that effective. And then they go into their motion. And once they go into their motion, then there's nothing. And I think that they have the talent to really – score a lot of points, but it's like Kerry Blackshear is not doing what he needs to be doing. The guys who should be shooting more are not shooting more. The guys who should be shooting less, are taking way too many shots. It's just they're not buying into whatever the identity is that the staff is trying to. I mean, they're smart. Those coaches are smart. I'm sure they're trying to instill some sort of, you know, offensive identity, but the players, I think, are just not buying it.
Yeah, I'm with you on the slow. So this is a team that is 236th in offensive tempo in basketball, which is just stupid. When you have – do they have 3 5-stars on their roster?
Exactly. Yeah, there's probably 2 teams in the country that have more than that.
Yeah, so they've got a 5-star point guard, a 5-star shooting guard, and a 5-star small forward, all of which, you know, at one point in time have been projected NBA draft picks, and they're playing at a 236th pace. That, I just don't get it at all. And then Kerry Blackshear, to your point, probably the most coveted transfer that we've seen in a couple years. He's 40 for 50 from the free throw line in 9 games, which is outstanding. And yet he kind of hangs around the perimeter, and he's a 26% 3-point shooter on the year. I just don't get it. And maybe to tie some of this back into the Mike Norvell conversation. So here's someone who we saw Mike White up close and personal when he brought his La Tech teams to Tallahassee during the NIT. And so they were 27-7 in 2013, 29-8 in 2014, 27-9 in 2015. By all accounts, Florida hit a home run hire when they brought on Mike White. Again, he is as sharp as it gets. They're talented. Does this just underscore maybe the flip of the coin? So he's had he's in his fifth season at US. So in the first four seasons, three of those four seasons had 13 or more losses, one of which had 16 losses. Is this just underscores the flip of the coin?
Yeah, I was so bummed when Florida hired him. I remember where I was. I was in Reno, and I was at a conference or something. And I remember I was texting my brothers, who are both Gators, that they had just made a brilliant hire. And here we are 5 years later, and it's just kind of rudderless, you know. And there's going to be people, to bring this back to Norvell, there's going to be people out there. I mean, everybody, every website, every talking head, everybody's going to have a strong opinion about this hire. And the reality is that nobody knows. Nobody knows how it's going to work. Nobody knows how it's going to work out. If there is an analyst out there that's got a great track record for this stuff, then somebody needs to point that person out, because I don't think that they exist.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you there for sure. Let's maybe change gears a bit to just some other action that's going on. You know, we talked about on the first podcast, would the UVA UNC game match that 38-31 score they had on the gridiron? I saw that UVA won the game of 21 in the first half. I think it was 24-18, maybe. I don't have the game on right in front of me, but great defense or bad offense or both? I don't know what is going on in Charlottesville.
Yeah, it was 6-5 with 10 minutes to go in the half. So apparently they had an offensive explosion that I missed. But I've been kind of watching the game, you know, as we go, and I don't know that I've seen a point scored. There was a break earlier where K.I. Clark had the ball, nobody ahead of him, and he dribbles it off his knee into the cheerleaders. You know, it's just one of those games. And there's another missed shot as we speak.
Yeah, well, so we're a couple minutes into the second half, and Leaky Black is UNC's leading scorer with 6 points. That's not good. So I don't know. It makes me. And we've got UVA coming to town in mid January, and I mean that's a game right now that, in Tuck, you got to feel pretty good about, right?
Absolutely. I'm thinking at this point we'd be favored.
Yeah. I agree. Our track record in Tallahassee combined with just the ineptitude of Virginia's offense. Now I'll say this, the game could be won in the 40s because you know UVA is going to keep it slow. But I'm with you. I think maybe not only favored, but maybe that's actually a 6 or 8 point win, which against a team like Virginia when there's only 55 possessions is pretty good. Elsewhere around the country, I hate to bring this up. I know for those who don't know, Michael is a big St. Mary's fan out in California. Dayton seems to be putting on St. Mary's right now, 46-25 at the half. Dayton's pretty darn good, I think. Have you seen Dayton play?
I have. I saw him play a couple times, and they're really good. They're one of those, I guess you can kind of classify them as a mid-major. They're probably actually bigger than that. But yeah, they're one of those teams that can really do some damage. They lost to Kansas, but it was overtime. They destroyed Georgia. They wrecked Virginia Tech. I mean, they're a really tough team, and they're coached by Anthony Grant, who I think is much better than maybe his reputation.
Sure.
Alabama, where he was kind of a mess. Yeah.
Well, and Alabama seems to be a tough. There's been several going back to the coaching, right? There's several high profile coaches that you think that's a home run hire, and a few years later, it's just not working out. We will definitely be covering national basketball more and more as we get deeper into the season. I'm sure we'll put out a March Madness kind of a preview podcast. But I am willing to say that Dayton is not a team that I'd want to face in, you know, let's say a a 4-5 matchup or maybe a 6-3 matchup. That is not a second round opponent I'd like to see in March.
No. I'm just
trying to look around here at anything else. Not too much standing out on a Sunday. I know there's NFL going on. Who's your NFL team, Michael? Do you have an NFL team?
Nah, not really. I was a Patriots fan since I was a kid, but
if you tell people that now, they think that you just
exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's I'm a Green Bay fan. Ever since I was huge Terrell Buckley, Leroy Butler fans growing up, and then they went up north together with Edgar Bennett. So the Packers did get a win today, so that was nice. But let's look forward then to some FSU basketball. Do you think that Florida State stays ranked on Monday? We went 1-1 this week. We were 17th coming in. A whole lot of losses in the top 25. Does FSU stay ranked?
Yeah, you know, voters are so fickle and dumb when it comes to this stuff, and I can see them. There's going to be somebody who doesn't watch today, and there are several people who don't watch, pay attention today because it's a Sunday, and they're going to drop us out of the rankings. You know, because we were 0-1 this week when, you know, reality is 1-1.
Sure. Did the score help today though? If they just decided I'm going to look at the score of every ranked team.
Oh yeah, you check in at the end, and it looks like Florida State was, you know, cruised the whole game. But I think we stay in. I think you know, like 22, you know, somewhere around in there, 21.
So let me ask you: does it matter? does it matter to be ranked?
Yes and no. I mean, everybody says it doesn't matter because the committee doesn't care about rankings, and your seed in March has nothing to do with rankings. But if you're ranked, your score is scrolling under on sure. every TV. You can talk to recruits about being ranked. You can, you know, have
it
all
gets
this
talked about on SportsCenter if people still watch that or SVP at night.
Yeah. If you're number 26, nobody's talking about you.
That is an accurate statement, even though you could be 26th in the polls and actually 15th on KenPom. So I'll say this: if we do stay ranked, and I think your 22 number might actually be the one to go with there, if I was putting over under. If we do stay ranked, we will probably stay ranked for another week because Florida State actually has 9 days off between now and their next game, which is, I believe, Tuesday the 17th. The guys are going to take some finals and rest and hopefully be able to practice as a full team. And then they'll kind of do a tour de force with a few directional schools. I think they're going to play Northern Alabama and Northern Florida. They're going to hit both those up with South Florida in between that, and actually a neutral court game. And then they'll follow up those three games with Georgia Tech at home. Out of those four, which would be the one that you'd be most concerned about for the remaining games of 2019?
Yeah, I'm probably more concerned about the South Florida game than I am about Georgia Tech. South Florida is not terrible. We get them at a neutral site. It's like right before Christmas. You know, people are going to be wanting to go see their families. It's one of those games where you could definitely see the team having a big letdown. They're coached by Brian Gregory. He's really familiar, you know, from his Georgia Tech days with Florida State. So he'll have his guys prepared. They beat Furman, who's actually a pretty good team. Loyola Chicago, that made that run, you know, in the tournament. They're a pretty good team. So they're not terrible, and we get them on a neutral court. And I'd say that I'm more confident about beating Georgia Tech, which is an ACC team, than I am about South Florida.
So part of that because the Georgia Tech game's at home. And speaking of offensively challenged teams, they would fall in with that UVA and UNC category. South Florida is an interesting team. Was it Oklahoma State a few years ago that we went down around Christmas time and lost to frankly an Oklahoma State team that was not as good as us?
Yeah.
On that same neutral, it's the Orange Bowl Classic, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's what. So actually, it's neutral site, but probably closer to South Florida than it is to Florida State. I do agree that's one that is losable. I think that if you asked me what the most likely record was, I'd say we'd probably go 4-0 over that stretch. But 3-1 is certainly not out of the question. And to be quite honest, with the start of the season that we had, I don't know that 3-1 is all that damaging as long as the one isn't North Florida or North Alabama. I think that, you know, 9 days off is going to be great. I'll really look forward to see maybe what the team looks like with a continuous week of practice. And then I think we'll be back to do, maybe we'll have another podcast here next weekend to do a little bit of a deeper preview of some of those games. But with the week off for Florida State, is there anything that you're looking forward to on the national scene? Any games that we should be keeping our eye on?
There's not a ton this week, unfortunately, but Tuesday is definitely a day to circle. There are tons of good games. You got the Madison Square Garden game. So you've got Louisville.
Texas Tech, Louisville?
Yeah, Louisville and Texas Tech, and then UConn and Indiana. And I'd really like to see how Indiana, they kind of laid an egg after they beat Florida State. They went up, they went to Wisconsin and got beaten.
Which is a tough place to play, Cole Arena there.
Yeah, but a neutral site, well, technically neutral site against UConn is a game they should win. So I'm interested to see that on Tuesday. And the earlier game I mentioned, yeah, Louisville, Texas Tech. And then that same night, you've got Butler playing at Baylor, which is two, you know, probably potential top 10 teams, and Maryland playing at Penn State. And people look at Maryland and Penn State, maybe aren't thinking much, but Penn State can play. They're actually good this year, which is weird for basketball.
Yeah, that is weird. Tuesday night is a solid night. And I'll throw in one on Wednesday, too, if you're just looking for some ACC action. Virginia Tech hosts Chattanooga. You know, we've already seen Chattanooga, and they're a – they're not a great team. I don't even know that I'd call them a good team, but they are a team that can certainly hit some threes and do some things well. So I'll be interested to see how Virginia Tech looks against an opponent that we've already seen once this year. All right, I think that's going to wrap it up for this instant cast. Again, Florida State beats Clemson 72-53 in a game that they pulled away with a dominating second half. Led by Devin Vassell. For Michael Rogner, I'm Matt Minnick. It's great to see everybody following along with this podcast. We'll hopefully have it up on Apple iTunes pretty soon. Till next time.